Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone and remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note today's call is being recorded. And it's now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Anthony Krishi. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Forward-looking statements included in this presentation are made pursuant to the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements relate to future events or to our future financial performance and involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause our actual results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements to be materially different from any future results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by these forward-looking statements. In some cases, you can identify forward-looking statements by the use of words such as may, could, expect, intend, plan, seek, anticipate, believe, estimate, predict, potential, or continue, or the negative of these terms or other comparable terminology. You should not place undue reliance on forward-looking statements because they involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that are, in some cases, beyond our control and that could materially affect actual results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements. A more detailed description of these and other risks and uncertainties may be found in our annual report on Form 10-K and other public filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. If any of these results or uncertainties materialize, or if our underlying assumptions prove to be incorrect, actual results may vary significantly from what we projected. And any forward-looking statement you read in this presentation reflects our current views with respect to future events and is subject to these and other risks, uncertainties, and assumptions relating to our obligations, operations, results of operations, growth strategy, and liquidity. We assume no obligation to publicly update or revise these forward-looking statements for any reason, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Now I'd like to turn over the call to Joe Muscato, President and Chief Executive Officer of Generex Biotechnology Corporation.
Good morning, everyone. On behalf of myself, Generex Executive Management Team, and the Generex Board of Directors, I would like to welcome our fellow stockholders and other interested parties in this morning's conference call. As you know, yesterday we declared a one-for-one dividend to thank our shareholders for believing in our plan and allowing us to execute our strategic reorganization strategy. We have now entered phase three of our three-phase plan to get Generex back on a listing on a national exchange, which we plan to achieve with the filing of an S-1 registration statement, the request for uplist, and financing event compliant with the uplist. This dividend, which will be paid upon the uplist, demonstrates our commitment to share our success with our dedicated shareholders. By continuing to execute on our strategy, we plan to build upon our now strong foundation to realize the full potential of Generex as a healthcare and life science holding company, with synergies and with synergistic subsidiaries that form an end-to-end solution for physicians and patients. Today, I am happy to share some details on our efforts to date and our plans to position Generex for the future. First, let's discuss the Generex Distribution Solutions, NDS. Terry Thompson, Chief Executive Operating Officer and President of NDS, together with Anthony Krishi, Esquire, CPA, our General Counsel and Legal Compliance Officer, have done considerable work to restructure our MSO model to be more efficient, profitable, and compliant with healthcare laws and regulations. Additionally, we are establishing intracompany agreements for MSO members to receive discounts on products developed and marketed by NewGenerix family of companies as part of our end-to-end solution. I will now turn the call over to Terry, who will provide details. Terry?
Thanks, Joe. As most are aware, Joe asked me to join Generex to help him fulfill his strategy of creating an alternative distribution model with a focus on the patient-physician relationship. His idea is to create a direct-to-patient and patient offering of products and services which are best in class and can improve the patient outcome. The current situation, including the consolidation of healthcare companies, vertical combinations of insurers, the concentrations of PBMs and distributors contracted by Big Pharma at first looked like an efficient system, but there's a wealth of data that demonstrate transparency issues in the system and resulting stifling of competition that has led to an ongoing increases in healthcare costs and costs of getting products to market. One of the first acquisitions in support of this strategy was the acquisition of Veneto Holdings at the time of distressed assets, but one that contained a unique MSO model. The uniqueness pertains to the fact that the MSO is owned by over 50 investment entities comprised of over 100 orthopedic and podiatric surgeons. We own a percentage of the MSO and act as a general partner. Since our acquisition, we spent several months investigating, assessing, and developing the best way forward to use this platform on a go-forward basis to further Joe's strategy. As background, it is important to understand that prior to our acquisition of Veneto and continuing today throughout the U.S., federal and state authorities are aggressively pursuing investigations against privately held companies to identify and weed out bad actors who've committed Stark Law or anti-kickback violations, along with a host of numerous other potential regulatory violations. We've embarked upon a major initiative to build the most compliant MSO possible going forward, and have ensured that what we purchased is, in fact, in compliance with all state and federal laws. In this regard, we retained a large top-shelf health law firm from Washington, D.C., and continued with three other firms involved in areas of specialization. We believe that we are more than in compliance. However, when it comes to physician behavior, the revenue fall-off from the MSO physicians indicate a reality that there is a fear factor that is limiting participation. Therefore, we set out to determine what MSO structure a public company might offer that is unique in comparison to what private companies may be able to offer. We hired a high-profile, exceptionally experienced physician practice leader, Lance Goodsvard, who is also well-known on the speaking circuit as it relates to surgeons and other large practice groups. Lance is leading our MSO physician relationship and has visited most of our current investors, numerous former investors, and new potential investors. His feedback was very simple. The current pre- and post-surgical anti-opioid pharmacy product offering is not as profitable as it used to be due to reduced reimbursements and lower volumes, which decrease the discounts available. They wish to see new products. The second area was the continued scrutiny by the federal government of MSOs and other organizations as it relates to payments to physicians causes pause, even though our MSO is compliant. Our monthly distributions are made as a net profit distribution based on the investment amount and not referrals. Our model only covers commercial business, leaving more than half of the physician patient population out of the services desired. Based on these conclusions, we strategized and developed an MSO that only a public company could offer, aligning it with our shareholders, adding highly profitable direct-to-physician products and services, eliminating all distribution checks, and creating a pathway to Stark exemption. This development fulfills what we believe to be all the desires of our physician investors. Current investors will be allowed to exchange their cash investment for GMBT shares, which will sit within our MSO and be restricted for a three-year period. Beginning in year three, the investors could harvest up to 25% a year if so desired. This investment is made with an agreement to help us build out our pharmacy volume back to new highs, and for zero distributions on pharmacy, allowing us to move into higher purchasing brackets. Any profits derived will be used of GMBT shares purchased annually, and we're subject to rolling three-year contracts. New investors will be allowed to invest by purchasing GMBT shares with restrictions as indicated above that I just discussed on a three-year restriction. All investors will be given deep discount codes for new products and services offered by GMBT acquired companies and or licensed contract products and services. Currently, the plan is to offer Accelogen, DMEIQ, biologics, and other surgical products. And last, we believe that having a $75 million shareholder equity and uplisting to the NASDAQ will provide for a Stark exemption, allowing for the offering to significant federal patient population of products and services. It's estimated that this alone would double the marketability of our business space. In conclusion, we believe that upon funding the rapid implementation of the company strategy, creating a nationwide alternative distribution model will be achieved with the basis of our Veneto acquisition and the rollout of our new products and services. So I'll turn it back over to Joe.
Okay, so thank you, Terry. I really appreciate that. So I'd like to talk about Ola Region right now. One of the best things that Generex has accomplished in the acquisition of Allregion and the launch of Excelligen Wound Conforming Matrix for the management of hard-to-heal wounds, I'd like to turn this over to Anthony DeLisi, Generex Head of Commercialization and CEO of Allregion. Together with his excellent team, have now launched Excelligen with commercial sales underway. We have high hopes for Excelligen and Allregion, and I will now turn the call over to Anthony. Anthony, please, if you would, please update the shareholders.
Yes, thank you, Joe, Terry, and Anthony, and good morning to all the shareholders. Thank you for joining this morning's investor call. I'd like to spend a few minutes updating everyone on Allregion's commercialization efforts of our wound-conforming matrix, Excelligen. Last month, we announced a limited release of Excelligen as we build up our inventory levels in the distribution channel. During the first 30 days of the launch, our selling efforts have focused in the VA health system, where the incident rate of diabetes is over 20%, and where, unfortunately, many of these veterans develop diabetic foot ulcers. As some of you are aware, our organization made a significant investment in a randomized, controlled, multi-center clinical control study to show the efficacy of Excelligen in healing diabetic foot ulcers, the hardest wound to heal. The primary investigator for the trial was Dr. Peter Bloom of Yale University. The results showed accelerated healing compared to standard of care and only 1.6 applications to close the diabetic foot ulcer wound. The team at Allregion, along with our surgeon advisory board, strongly believes that this clinical data, along with the many benefits that Excelligen offers to the surgeon, to the patient, and to the payers, that Excelligen offers benefits above the current cellular tissue sheets that are used to treat hard-to-heal wounds. We strongly believe we have a value proposition both clinically and economically that will be attractive to not only the VA health system, but the entire U.S. health system where hard-to-heal wounds are being managed. One of the first surgeons in the VA hospital system to use Excelligen remarked on its ease of use and how well the product conforms to the wound bed. This specific surgeon often used our two main competitors, cellular tissue sheets, but has switched to Excelligen to treat his hard-to-heal wounds. I'm excited to announce we have several large VAs in the U.S. evaluating Excelligen based on the benefits discussed earlier. We are confident that these evaluations will increase our revenue ramp more quickly in 2019. I am pleased to announce that we are ahead of schedule in our commercialization efforts of Excelligen in the U.S. commercial hospital system. One of the hurdles, in gaining access to driving revenue in the commercial hospitals is getting your product approved by the Value Analysis Committee, or often referred to as the VAC, V-A-C. These committees can take between 3.6 months to approve a new product stocked in their institution. The good news is that we already have several teaching hospitals in the U.S. preparing to take Excelligen through their VAC process. And the surgeons leading these efforts in their hospitals are key opinion leaders in the U.S. who have agreed to develop white papers, symposium posters, and podium presentations for regenerative educational trade shows, including the largest show of the year, SAWC, where 2,000 wound care healthcare providers will be in attendance. Also, in 2 weeks, the Generex and the Allregion team will be attending the American Podiatric Medical Association, APMA, national meeting in Salt Lake City. Within the next week, we anticipate receiving the official seal of approval from the APMA for Excelligen. The seal of approval is granted to a product after the Podiatric Seal Committee, a standing committee of the American Podiatric Medical Association, evaluates and determines whether the product allows normal foot function and promotes quality foot health. This is very exciting news for us. Finally, as we expect to see continued success in driving growth in the commercialization of Excelligen, we also continue to drive progress in building our pipeline for the future. We have identified several technologies within the regenerative wound care space that could be complementary to the Excelligen brand and not take our selling organization off of call point. We expect to have an announcement for you in the near future, as we are committed to building a portfolio of world-class solutions for hard-to-heal wounds. I'd just like to take a minute to thank Joe and the entire Generex team for supporting our strategy to be the leader in the regenerative wound care space. Their support has been invaluable and has certainly helped us get off to a really fast start. Thanks again to all the Generex leadership team. And thank you again, Joe. Back to you.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate that. And I'd just like to say, it's good that we're in commercialization mode. And last week when you sent that check from our distribution partner, McKesson, it was nice to see. It's always nice to see when checks start rolling in from commercialization efforts and real sales. So great job to you and your team, and I appreciate everything. So I'd like to talk about a really exciting area now. As everybody knows, Generex is, had done a dividend to our shareholders on our New Generex Immuno-Oncology Company, which is the former Antigen Express. We delivered that dividend. That dividend now our shareholders own. It's registered in book shares with our transfer agent, Broadridge. And we're excited about where we're taking that company. As we had stated, we're going to be taking that public. I'm pretty excited about today announcing our commercialization partner as well as merger partner. So I'm very excited to announce that we have come to terms with the management of a clinical stage immunotherapy company, Coromic Life Sciences, to merge it to New Generex Immuno-Oncology in an all-stock transaction. With the merger, New Generex Immuno-Oncology will house both Coromic and our subsidiary, Antigen Express, which is developing AE37 in combination with checkpoint inhibitors for the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer. Together, the broad technology portfolio and deep pipeline opportunities provided in the merger position New Generex Immuno-Oncology on the forefront of cancer immunotherapy. Coromic, which is affiliated with MD Anderson Cancer Center, has multiple patented proprietary immuno-oncology platforms, including the highly prized CAR-T, CAR-NK, and oral vaccine delivery system, and Diamond AI, an artificial intelligence system with a multifaceted predictive algorithm that combines genomic sequencing, proteomic analysis, and clinical data to identify novel tumor mutations that can be targeted with immunotherapy. The company has used the Diamond AI technology to identify and validate several cancer biomarkers, including SP17, which was granted the final orphan indication for ovarian cancer by the FDA, and is in the early stage clinical trials with both injectable and oral formulations. In addition to advancing the ovarian cancer trials with both injectable and oral formulations. In addition to advancing the ovarian cancer programs, we plan to advance the company's proprietary CAR-T, CAR, and CAR-NK technologies into proof-of-concept clinical trials. We also have many exciting opportunities to implement the Diamond AI technology in cooperation with academic partners at leading cancer research institutions across the country to not only identify new cancer antigens, but also to build out the multifaceted database with genomic, proteomic, and clinical data to guide personalized treatment regimens based on patients' tumor profiles. I will now turn over the call to Eric von Hoff, President of New Generex Immuno-Oncology, for a clinical operations update on the FB14 trial of AE37 in combination with Merck's Keytruda for the treatment of triple-negative breast cancer. Eric?
Thank you much, Joe. We're happy to report that the NSABP has now activated clinical trial sites and has begun screening patients for the clinical trial. Our first patient has consented and is presently undergoing the screening process. NSABP has projected that enrollment will be completed around the middle of 2020. In addition to our combination trial with Keytruda, we're planning additional trials with A37 in combination with checkpoint inhibitors, which have become standard of care for an expanding list of cancers. A number of those are also very good candidates for treatment with AE37. So in short, these additional trials will expand our clinical utility and maximize partnership opportunities for the future. We're working with clinical advisors to develop specific protocols and will provide updates as the program progresses. We're also very excited about the potential for working with Curomic. Both their oral vaccine delivery platform and Diamond AI technologies are highly complementary to our IAKI platform. We plan to initiate research and development programs for both these technologies together with the Curomic team. We're very much looking forward to this new chapter in our immuno-oncology efforts. Thank you, Joe. It's back to you.
Thank you, Eric. I really appreciate that. Thank you. So I'd like to discuss now NuGenerix Chronic Care Solutions and NuGenerix Health. I'm exceptionally pleased to announce that we will be launching a new business, NuGenerix Chronic Care Solutions, in partnership with Sanjay Kumar, an experienced leader in the provision of HMO services and support, to provide ancillary health services for patients living with diabetes. Under the proposed operating plan, NCCS plans to provide diabetic patients with ancillary medical and chronic care services as per guidelines established by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and professional medical societies to ensure appropriate care and to achieve optimal health outcomes. To that end, in the coming months, NCCS plans to initiate operations in partnership with 4 multi-specialty clinics in Arizona with 60 in-network providers, primarily endocrinologists who currently serve large populations of diabetic patients, many with chronic care needs. Under terms of the agreement, NCCS plans to offer the clinics patients with convenience by providing on-site ophthalmology, podiatry, and chronic care management services that are covered under CMS as essential elements of diabetic care. The upside potential for NCCS is considerable, as only a small percentage of Medicare-eligible patients are enrolled in chronic care programs. Once the NCCS model is established with the specialists in Arizona, we plan to expand the program to other practices and states. With the founding of NCCS, Generex is positioned to implement the final stage of its transformation from a pure development company to an end-to-end healthcare solutions provider. As announced, we have been working over the last several months to establish NuGenerix Health, a health maintenance organization, HMO, that will provide healthcare services and disease management solutions for patients living with chronic medical conditions. NuGenerix is in negotiations with Beacon Health Solutions, a management company supervised and owned by Dr. Kiran Patel that provides a wide range of solutions for Medicare, Medicaid, commercial, and PFFS products to multiple HMOs nationwide. Generex is in discussions to define a management contract or collaborative agreement for managed care pertaining to the deal for NuGenerix Health, MSO, and HMO businesses. NuGenerix Health plans to serve patients with chronic special needs and dual eligible special needs plans on the Medicare Advantage and Medicare Part B and D. NuGenerix Health plans to generate significant membership growth by developing patient-centric engagement programs and building on our strong provider relationships. NuGenerix Health's mission will be to provide the health of its members by offering innovative products, cost-effective solutions, and service excellence through integrated technologies designed to maximize relationships between the provider and the members. NuGenerix Health will strive to be recognized as a national leader for care delivery excellence and innovation, a preferred provider with grassroots values that offers a coordinated member experience through integrated patient-centric care. NuGenerix Health plans to enhance the care pathways and treatment options for its members by coordinating health care among their physicians, specialists, and caregivers, offering competitive member benefits for preventive care, condition detection and intervention, driving the use of point-of-care data and evidence-based medical technology platforms. We look forward to finalizing our agreement with Dr. Patel and Sanjay Kumar to build NuGenerix Health and complete the company's vision to provide end-to-end solutions for improving healthcare. Generex will be the sole funding source for the NuGenerix Health Initiative, and we look forward to completing the agreements and funding the operation in the coming weeks. I'd like to also now talk about Pantheon Medical and MediSource Partners, as we've announced that we'll be acquiring those businesses. I'd like to provide an update on those acquisitions. So as we all know, Pantheon and MediSource are surgical supply as well as biologics business. As previously reported, we are in the final stage of finalizing the acquisitions of MediSource Partners, a specialty distribution company, and Pantheon Medical, foot and ankle and manufacturer specialty orthopedic surgery products and tools. As we are finalizing the final documents for closing that acquisition, Generex still plans to close this acquisition within the coming weeks. The documents that the lawyers have been going back and forth with are in its final stages, and we believe that by next week we will be ready to sign those documents and close both of those companies. So we're quite excited about those. They do offer a wide array of products that we can move through our existing MSO as well as future states that we open up with our MSO. So we're very excited about that. And I'd just like to wrap up the call with, thanking everybody for the attention today. There are a number of exciting things happening at Generex. And with the launch of Accelligen, the reorganization of our MSO platform, the planned merger of NuGenerix Immuno-Oncology with Peromic, and the new business opportunities with NuGenerix Chronic Care Solutions and NuGenerix Health, we feel that the future is poised for great growth and value to our shareholders. So as you can see, we've been rebuilding Generex into a revenue-generating and cutting-edge development company with the best-in-class executive team that has the experience and expertise to lead the NuGenerix team into the future. So I'd like to open up the lines now for questions from our shareholders, and I appreciate the time this morning. So please, anyone with questions, we'd love to answer them.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You can remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, it's star and one on your touch-tone phone. We'll pause a few moments to allow questions to queue. And we'll take a first question from Bill Ketcher. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Bill.
I have two questions. First, what are your plans, if any, for Orlin, which was the basis for Generex's existence, as we all know, as long-term shareholders? And the second question is, why are you splitting the stock, basically splitting the stock by issuing a one-for-one dividend, when most of the big companies, the big Wall Street wire companies, are afraid of dealing with stocks that are below $5 a share, let's say? And by splitting the stock, it'll be a while before hopefully we'll get to that stage.
Good questions. Let me take the latter first. So, when we originally came in and took over the company as far as management goes, we did a pretty drastic reverse stock split. And that stock split was culminated by 23 years of this company raising lots and lots of money over those years, and the security structure needed to be cleaned up completely for us to have any shot at reorganizing the company. So when the Generex investors gave the Generex former management team the permission to clean up the company and do a drastic stock reverse, we had promised that if we had the opportunity to clean up the company, we would share in its success with the shareholders for giving us this opportunity. So this would be the last dividend that we would give out And it is tied with the last part of our overall plan, which is to get back to the NASDAQ stock exchange. This company was a national NASDAQ company for many, many years. And the goal has always been to get back to NASDAQ. This dividend is not that dilutive at all. It adds 9 million more shares in total to the cap table. That is unbelievable when we're giving out a one-for-one, which is considered a very large dividend. And, you know, I can only tell you that if you're talking to the exchanges and you don't hit the stock price threshold, they'll normally recommend do a reverse stock split. I don't believe in doing reverse stock splits, and that hurts shareholders. Yes, we did one in the beginning, but that was to clean everything up and to get a shot at where we are today. So I believe, coupled with all of our initiatives, plus taking our shareholders with us, and as evident by the announcement of the dividend, the shareholders have responded. And my belief is we already fit the $2 threshold of listing. Will it be over $4? Will it be over $6? I believe that shareholders will respond a lot better with a dividend than they would with a reverse stock split. And I have no issues with sharing success with shareholders. That's one of our primary goals. So for me, I'm not at all nervous about this stock dividend.
But doesn't that make it more difficult, Joe, for a listing on the NASDAQ National Exchange if you're going to dilute the stock?
I'm only diluting the stock by 9 million shares. It's minuscule. We'll have, if you read today's press release, we'll have a grand total of about 69 million shares in the market. That would be totally, based upon the size of this company and where we're going, 69 million shares is very amenable and obtainable as far as liquidity and listing requirements. So, I mean, you see what we have out, based upon what we have out today, most days we don't even trade over 100,000 shares of stock.
Thank you.
So this will provide us the necessary liquidity that we will need to hold a national listing.
Yeah, what about Orlin?
Orlin, we do have Dr. Andy Anderson on the team. Dr. Anderson is a legend, in the industry. And he reformulated Orlin from 7 to 10 puffs, which, in my opinion, back then, from a utility standpoint, was never a good product because of the cost versus subcutaneous injection. For me, he reformulated, Orlin down to 1 to 2 puffs now. It's a much more better acting as well as formulated product. We will get back to that. As you see from chronic care management, we are getting back into the diabetic space. And once we're able to build out the revenue models, we will get back to Orlin. We are committed to Orlin. We are in discussions right now with one or two companies to potentially partner Orlin out with them. The buccal mucosa, I believe, has always been the best way to deliver insulin versus pulmonary and even subcutaneous injection. So it is something that we're committed to. We will get back to, and we just haven't made it a focus as of yet.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Christopher Salvo. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Joe. Chris Salvo.
Hey, Chris.
I would like to know a couple things. Number one, when will New Generics be given a symbol when a value separate from GNBT? And also, you were negotiating some time ago, with Fuse Medical. How is that going? Thank you.
We're still in contact with Fuse. We love the company. We love their product line. We're hoping that we can make a transaction happen. We will revisit that transaction in the coming months. We finished due diligence on both sides. We still have a little ways to go on negotiation. But we still believe it's great company, great fit, and we haven't lost sight of that acquisition if it's possible to make. But we will endeavor to get back to that. In regard to the other part of the question, could you repeat that, please?
In relation to the new Generex, the 20-to-1 split, it only shows up as a number. Will it be giving a symbol as well as a value?
Oh, you mean as far as the antigen dividend? Yes.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
All that dividend was paid. I just want to make it perfectly clear that the Generex shareholders that were entitled to that dividend was paid. Our shareholders own New Generex Immuno-Oncology. It is book shared with the transfer agent, Broadridge. Those accounts are established. Any shareholder can call Broadridge and request a stock certificate, and they will receive one. But until we take it public, obviously the value has not been realized yet. Of course, we get a lot of calls about the discount brokers. You know, 1 minute it's listed, 1 minute it's not listed. But again, anyone can get a stock certificate. They're readily available. But I would suggest leaving them where they are to transfer agent. When we take New Generex Immuno-Oncology public, they will be readily put into their accounts. So we've painstakingly over the last year, tried to identify the best partner. We believe we found that partner with Karomic. Karomic is a very exciting company with red hot button, areas that are very exciting, such as the CAR-T and their AI technology, as well as even oral delivery. So we believe that this merger will occur. Both sides are highly motivated to make that happen. And once that is complete, we will take the new company made up of both platforms public. And our hope is within the coming months, it will be public. But like anything, it takes time to do due diligence. It takes time to do the legal work. I mean, an acquisition, the legal that goes into it with schedules and contracts, it's a mountain of work. So our hope is to complete all of that work very, very shortly, and then have the ability to take the new Generex Immuno-Oncology public, but now it has high value with the addition of Karomic. So that was our focus, to find a partner, to add extreme value, which we believe with Karomic there will be, and then we're going to take that public. So
very good, Joe. In relation to Fuse Medical, I see that they, at the beginning of the quarter, they started at 11 cents a share, and at the end of the quarter, they're up 55 cents a share. Does that make it more difficult to negotiate with them?
No, because it doesn't trade at all. It trades maybe five shares every month. I mean, it's not a liquid company, so, if you're not liquid, it's really not, there's no value to what the stock price is. Buy 100 shares and it can go to $1. So I didn't look at their stock price whatsoever in any of their negotiations, and I don't think anybody could because of the fact that it's not a liquid stock. It's right now just a placeholder. I'm not saying that they can't take it, they can't make it more liquid, but as of right now, that was never a factor in any of the negotiations with Fuse.
And I also see that currently they're still having a little bit of financial problems as well. Thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate your answers.
Yep. Thank you very much for the questions.
And we'll take our next question from John Nickel. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yo, this is Jack Nickel. How are you this morning?
How are you, Jack?
I'm an old man. That's how I am. I'd like to follow up on this new Generex. The shares were, the dividend was transferred to TD Ameritrade in my account, but it has a great big old sign hanging on it, do not sell. I'm concerned that it's sitting there moldering, and the folks at TD Ameritrade, on my last statement, had the statement on my written on my monthly statement was, get rid of this worthless stock. And then it was reinstated that the number of shares were
from
on there. Now, what's up with this? How long are we going to sit there? And as a matter of fact, I'd like to go back to that other question that was posed earlier on the dividend coming up. I've got the copies of what the requirements are for listing on a NASDAQ. And based upon what I'm reading here and what I know of Generex, we don't meet the qualifications for NASDAQ, and I don't see how we're going to manage that in the next 3 to 4 months. And that then means that the dividends are no good, as I understood that last.
Well, let me answer the first question first, because you're getting into a lot of different questions all at once, and I'm not going to remember everything. So, you know, on the gift that we gave the shareholders with the dividend of New Generex Immuno-Oncology, you know, you're dealing with a discount broker. So, you know, discount brokers, from what we've noticed, have had the biggest problem with the dividend because they're not set up for private company shares. So that's why you're seeing an erratic behavior in your account, you know, as it pertains to our private company shares. So, as I said, we're moving towards a merger with another company that will add considerable value to our existing assets in the cancer space. We will merge that company, hopefully, within the coming months. And this, they still need to get their shareholder approval as well as their board approval for the merge. But we believe that the deal is good enough that that will occur. But the gift that we gave shareholders is exactly what it is. When we spin out the company, they will enjoy liquidity in the stock that we've given them once it's public. It is not public. So the expectation of having a value with the discount broker that is not set up to put private shares in your account, you know, it is what it is. I mean, it will be public. We are committed to taking it public. We would have never given the dividend if we don't believe we're going to take it public. It's just a matter of time before it gets public. So I'd hang in there on that. But you know, I wouldn't expect it to have any value until it's public. you know, the brokerage firms are set up for public stock. This is not a public stock. It's a private. And let me get to your question about the NASDAQ requirements. NASDAQ has requirements at $2 a share, $3 a share, and $4 a share. Okay, we fit mostly all of the requirements from a balance sheet standpoint. The price, based upon what we believe in the coming weeks, will be represented in the stock price. And we believe that we will put that application in for an uplist in the coming weeks. So I don't know what requirements you're reading, but there are new requirements on $2, $3, and $4. And we hired a company that specializes in uplistings, and that's all they do. And they're representing us for that uplisting and application. And, you know, as far as we're concerned, we don't feel that the bar to get to the NASDAQ is that much higher for us.
Well, I was looking at the overall requirements to get in here, and there was only about two out of the four that I, based upon looking at our financial statements, that appeared that we qualified for.
Well, and there's only two major ones on the financial statements, and we have to have over a certain amount of shareholder equity, and we have about $21 million, and you know, the highest plateau is $5 million to get on, as well as assets on the management. We have $5.6 million on the management. So from our last Q that we filed Wednesday night. So as far as, as I said, the balance sheet requirement, there's no issues there whatsoever.
Okay, so you anticipate that within the next 2 to 3, 4 months, at least by October, that we're going to be qualified to jump to the NASDAQ. Is that correct?
That's what it said in the press release, and yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Everything that I have heard has been speculative, and I wish you the best on this, Joe, because like I said, I'm an old man, I'm a dead man walking, and I really have enjoyed the ride. It's been a learning experience for me. I was kind of like that turnip that fell off the truck and landed in the executive express machine headed to paradise, and it's been a learning situation for me. I appreciate you hanging tough with me, and thanks for the information.
Yep, no, absolutely, and we appreciate it. You know, just have to realize that before this management team took over this company was dead. There was no activity whatsoever. The company was out of business, literally, other than one or two people.
I'm concerned about me being dead before the company gets them up and rolling here.
I sent you a little note.
I couldn't get through communication-wise with you, and I sent you a little note that said, done is better than perfect. And I don't know whether you got it, but that still kind of holds.
Well, listen, you know, it's never easy cleaning up 23 years of other people's misfortunes and missteps, and we've done that here at Generex now, and you know, I'm just looking forward to the future, and nothing is easy, nothing is overnight, things take time, and we believe that we're poised for the last leg of our plan to be finalized and be executed, and then move into the future and building value for our shareholders.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm concerned about that taking effect, because if we don't make the deadline dates that you established in that last email, then the dividend is canceled. So that was what I was concerned about, and I'm tied up. I can't move.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, sometimes, good intentions, you know, this is all about gifting our shareholders. We're doing our absolute best to do that. You know, And we believe that we will accomplish our end goal, which is to do exactly what we say we're going to do. So,
well, I hope so, and please untie me so I can do something positive with my accounts. Appreciate your help, Joe, and take care of yourself.
There you go. Thank you.
And we can go next to Bill Woodruff. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Joe. Maybe I can help simplify things. I think you said you were on the final stages of your S-1.
Yes,
we are.
Where are
we on that? Is there an underwriter, and how big would the deal be?
Oh, the S-1, you know, our S-1 is 23 years worth of information. So it's very big. Plus all the new things that we've been able to accomplish over the last couple of years, that's all in an S-1. Plus, every company's financial aspects are in there. And, you know, with an S-1, we have, just to give you, the S-1 is a mountain of work. Lawyers, have to meticulously craft it. But just look at it from a perspective of Generex has five different entities. There are five different auditing firms that have to review the numbers. And you have to get special permission when you do an S-1 from each of the auditing firms. So Ola Region had an auditing firm. Veneto had an auditing firm. Regentis had an auditing firm. Generex has an auditing firm. HDS had an auditing firm. So each of those companies that we acquired, we need sign off from each of those auditing firms. So it's a lot of work. There are a lot of players that have to be involved. We need a lot of approvals, but we're at the final throes of it. Right now, we're just waiting for one last piece, which is the audit for 2018 for Regentis. They should be completed within the next 15 to 20 days. Once that's done, we will be able to file the S-1. The deal size is still being determined, so I can't give that to you. But as of right now, our main focus is to get the S-1 done, moving towards an application to the NASDAQ listing.
Sounds like you have to herd cats here. Have you chosen an underwriter?
Yes, we've chosen an underwriter, and they've been on it with us. Yes.
Can't say who.
Not right now. Once the S-1 is filed, everyone will know who that is.
Okay, and you think it'll be filed in a month or so?
I'm hoping a lot sooner. But again, when you have so many different entities that have to weigh in. People think it's just, one lawyer, he puts it together, and then I approve it, and it gets filed. It's not the way it happens. It's not reality. It's not the real world. As I said, I got five auditing firms that have to approve this, go through it completely. I have a law firm that's got to put it together. I have each of the companies have to weigh in on their sections. The underwriter has to get their legal involved. It's a process. It takes time, and a company like Generex, which has been around 23 years, all of that history goes in it. So it's no easy task. We've done our review internally. So the only thing that's last and pending is our Regentis 2018 numbers that has to be added. Other than that, we are complete with it. So we're hoping that those numbers will be done soon, and once they are done, they'll be added, and then we can file the S-1.
Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And we'll go next to Tony Fiorino. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey, Joe. Good morning, everybody. My first question you kind of addressed, and I appreciate you doing so, with regard to the dividend. Because when the 20-to-1 dividend first occurred, and this is not from the company, but from people who were representing and kind of pushing the stock, it was viewed as a literally, oh, you're just going to get 20 times more your shares. And obviously only an idiot would think that the stock price wouldn't get affected when there's that much more of an impact on the float. Having said that, this is a dividend, but it is increasing the float, albeit by what is somewhere between 10 and 15%. So we all have to assume that the stock price is going to be affected in a vacuum regardless. But thanks for at least clearing that up, because there are people operating on behalf of the stock, not the company, who positioned it very, very differently when this was a 20-to-1 dividend. So thank you for accomplishing that.
Well, let me just add one thing to what you just said. So when we started the process on our acquisitional strategy, you know, we were trading about $1.60, $1.70. Stock, you know, we announced the dividend, the first one, to give back to shareholders after a really drastic reverse stock split a year and a half, 2 years prior. So, you know, the stock got as high as $26 a share. And, you know, we settled in and paid at $18.99 a share. We were auto-adjusted to 83 cents. And look where we are today. So today, we're up over 1,800% from where we started approximately, 1,800%, okay? When we were auto-adjusted because, you know, the exchange, FINRA, auto-adjusted us with their brokers, and they handled it like a forward split. This is not a forward split. There's no taxes here. Cost base is the same. It's a dividend. So instead of going 20 to 1, you kept the 1 and you got 20 additional. So as of today, I'm quite proud that, you know, we're up over 1,800% on today's price, of $2 or whatever it is right now. I'm on the phone. But, you know, we went from 160 to 26. We paid the dividend at 18.99. On the X date that Monday, we were auto-adjusted to 83 cents, which is still 18.99 in value. And here we are today at $2, more than double.
You should be proud. Yeah, I mean, listen, as a shareholder, I'm in the money. It's great. But it just, as again, you know, certain things fall outside of your control in terms of how these things are positioned. And the good news is, you know, those of us who got in at the right time, and that's most of us, we're in the money, which is good. It'll be nice to see the stock perform more along the lines of its performance versus these calls. Because if I had more time to day trade, you know, I would seriously operate around these conference calls, because the reactions are always very positive. But the question that I've got as it pertains specifically to the spin out, you guys discuss, and rightfully so, the legal aspects of what has to happen logistically before these things can occur. And that's important for us as shareholders to know. What I'm wondering, and you know, it's all speculation, of course, but let's assume the spin out was its own separate business and it was just a regular privately owned venture-backed business. I'm wondering what you guys feel in terms of strictly the performance of the business. In other words, if we were looking at this as, here's a company we want to just take public as if it existed on its own, what are some of the highlights that you guys emphasize? If you were doing the roadshow right now, what would you be pitching in terms of the performance, the profitability, the projections, et cetera, for immunology? Immunotherapy, rather.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, the way I look at things is, you know, back in, and Dr. Von Hoff can help you with this, and Eric, if you would, please, too, also. You know, Generex back in, I believe it was 2010, 2011-ish, when we got our interim data on our breast cancer trial, which was the largest adjuvant breast cancer trial of the time, we had hired Marshall Stevens. Marshall Stevens is pretty much the be-all, end-all in appraising assets for the pharma industry. So, you know, at the time, Generex had hundreds of millions of dollars in valuation and appraisal just on the breast cancer as well as much larger on the overall platform. That was when we didn't have a big pharma partner. Today, we have a partner with Merck and his Keytruda. PD-1s, as everyone knows, are doing quite well. They're changing the landscape of cancer care. as evident by look at even triple negative. Today, there's a new frontline treatment with the great stuff that Genentech Roche has out and is commercialized. So, Eric, if you would, what
sure.
are your feelings on the differences from where we were to where we are today?
Yeah.
I'm only talking about antigen. I'm not talking about Coromic and all the great stuff that they have.
Sure. Yeah, no, happy to fill that out a little bit. We've been doing these for a number of years now, and I think, we were early in the cancer immunotherapy space. And I think we showed in our 300-patient phase 2 study was monotherapy that got very encouraging results. And it was based on those results that we got the collaboration with, the supply agreement collaboration with Merck, and also work with the NSABP, which is known for, they were years ago, they really standardized how to do clinical trials in breast cancer, developed Herceptin, and, really tried to stay on the cutting edge of the new technologies out there. And I mean, I can tell you, having been in oncology for my entire career, that the last couple of years have been really the most exciting times that I've seen. I mean, with checkpoint inhibitors, CAR T cells, it's a whole new era out there. So I think that we're in a very good position to really make advances and establish partnerships in that space. So as indicated, we have now a collaboration ongoing in triple negative breast cancer patients combining a checkpoint inhibitor with our cancer vaccine, and also, as I mentioned, checkpoint inhibitors have gotten approved for lots of different cancers. A number of those are very amenable to adding AE37 to that regimen, which is a pretty much a non-toxic therapeutic that will only benefit those. And I mean, the other thing is the obvious strategy of drug companies with checkpoint inhibitors is, even though they're only getting a 30% response rate, if you can get approval as monotherapy, that's great. So that's what they've done. Now they see that they're bumping their heads at that 30-40%. And they're looking around for other things. And frankly, that's how we came into the picture with our collaboration with Merck, and other people are going to be doing the same thing. So now that they've seen that they can get approvals on their own, they're looking to see how they can make that better. And that's exactly the space where we can participate and improve on the responses that have been seen so far.
I guess one of the questions that would be kind of as a follow-up to that, getting back to more of the logistics of it, when a company is, as a startup that gets its funding and moves towards an IPO, there are certain, I won't call them restrictions, but there are milestones you have to hit in terms of quarters of revenue, X percent of profitability, things along those lines. Are those milestones different as this is a wholly owned subsidiary? And if it's not, where are you in conjunction with, let's say, those typical milestones that a private company would have to hit before it could trade publicly?
Well, this is cancer research, right? So, no biotechnology company makes money unless they have a product that goes through, the proper FDA phase trials and then gets approval. But, 99% of all research companies don't make money. It's all based upon the trial work and getting to the end game, which is getting a drug approved. And then typically, that's when monetization occurs on even a larger level of being acquired or licensed that product out to, say, a larger pharmaceutical company that has the backbone to commercialize it. So, there are no revenues with biotechnology companies. It's all about development, and it's about shots on goal. And, we believe that with the potential merger of Coromic, the shots on goal will be exponential in getting to a finish line of commercialization on not only one product, but multiple products. So, but there's a lot of work ahead of us, but will this support a public listing? Absolutely. Talking about CAR T, it's the hottest area right now out there. Coromic brings that platform with it. You're talking about biomarker technology and artificial intelligence. Coromic brings that platform with it. You're talking about oral delivery. We believe there's a real good shot that that could occur. And right now, today, there are no oral deliveries of cancer treatments. So coupled with their newer technologies, but in the red-hot button areas of excitement, with our seasoned stuff of breast cancer and prostate cancer trials that we're conducting right now, I think that this is for sure a standalone public company once we put it all together.
Well, I appreciate you walking me through this. Unfortunately, a lot of times on these calls, you guys are dragged into the weeds on a lot of common sense stuff and, you know, cleaning some baggage up in terms of emotional attachments to stuff that's happened in the past. So what you've taken on is very ambitious, and it's always encouraging to hear as you guys are taking steps towards this actually coming to fruition. So thanks, and, you know, keep up the great work, and, you know, you guys continue to make it really hard for people to dump this stock once it hits its threshold, which is a good thing. So the dividend is, I know, strategic as much as anything else, and just keep it up. We're excited.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, listen, the way I look at it, if you really take a look, we have over 60 million shares out right now, you know, fully diluted. This will add an extra 9 million to make it to about 69 million, you know, all in. For me, that'll provide a little additional liquidity that we really need, because we do trade a lot under 50,000 shares. And maybe that's because no one wants to sell it. That's great. But I think that we're in the right area of where we need to be for the listing, as well as getting the necessary liquidity to move the needle into the future.
Well, last question is just a yes-no. Is this, for lack of a better term, this dilution, this addition to the float, is this the last of those events?
Yep. As I had said way back when we first took over the company, I believe the first conference call, you know, we'll take the shareholders with us on success. This is the third part of the overall plan, which is to get that national listing. Once we have that national listing, we've completed the plan we put forth when we first became management, took over the company. And, you know, for us, that'll be about just building out the businesses that we've either acquired or that we've now rekindled from the past to get to the future. So, yeah, this will be the last dividend in the overall plan that we put forth. So
outside of splits, the float should not increase past this 70 million number?
Well, like I had said, I think it was the last conference call, even one before that, when we did the first dividend. My goal is to keep it at right around 75 million shares all in.
Okay, great. Well, I took up a lot of time, guys. Thanks for answering all the questions.
Thank you very much.
And we'll go next to Rob Eichelkraut. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hello, Joe. I've been with GMBT for greater than 10 years. So first thing I want to say is thank you to you and your team for the work to date. It's obvious that you guys are putting a lot of thought into what you're doing, and I certainly can appreciate that.
Thank you.
I want you to know that I've been involved in research for over 30 years, worked in many therapeutic areas, including oncology and also in wound care. So I was really excited when you announced a partnership with Fullergan and with the launch of Accelligen. Recently, I've been working on some diabetic foot ulcers and venous leg ulcer studies, and we're seeing some pretty good progress with products out there that are really changing how DFUs are going to be treated. And as you know, as a side note, as you know and many others, many of these folks with DFUs end up losing limbs. So the cost savings out there by having a product that can fix these DFUs is huge. So the market's wide open for you, which that really excites me. That said, I heard you say that you're going to be marketing out to the VA hospitals, but what other marketing strategies do you have for the wound care centers and podiatrists who are treating these DFUs? Because, again, it's a wide open market, in my opinion, and there's some other products that are really hot on the trail here with showing some very promising results. So if you can just give me some additional marketing strategies on that, that would be fantastic.
Well, I'll let Tony DeLisi, the CEO of Old Region, weigh in on that. But What excites me about Ola Region is that, you know, listen, there are not many companies that get an opportunity to commercialize an FDA-approved, cleared, you know, treatment. We have 17 indications approved, you know, and cleared. You know, we're commercializing right now. McKesson is our partner as our master distributor. Checks just started rolling in. Tony DeLisi's put together a great team, and, you know, we're very high on it. But for me, you know, Tony mentioned this briefly, we expect to get the accreditation from the Podiatry Association of America as being a certified product that they recommend. There are about 12,000 podiatrists in that association. And once we get that accreditation, that's a great marketing tool. Having access to all those members with a superior product for wound healing, especially in the diabetic wound ulcer areas. So, Tony, if you would, why don't you weigh in please take it over.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe, and thanks for the question. It was an excellent question. So our go-to-market strategy is segmented by the various markets that we're going to approach first, second, third, and we layer in. So what we've done is we've got representatives that we've trained to impact the VA, followed by the institutional, because the OR is our primary target with this particular product. And when I say OR, it's surgical product as well as it is a DFU product, right, because it's indicated for wounds. So with that, the first two targets are the VA system, because the VA system has a fair amount of diabetic 20% patient, as I stated in the statement earlier today. And once we go into the VA, we're going to migrate into the institutions as well. So the commercial institutions, which the VAC committees are currently evaluating Acceligen for approval. And I'm sure you're very familiar with that project. We've also already canvassed Medicare, Medicaid services to get the proper coding for the product, which we're pending an approval in July for the wound care centers, because as you know, these various segments all pay at a different reimbursement rate. We did recently get our listing in Redbook, so we are covered in the podiatric office for all procedures that are done in the office. We're working closely right now with the C-suite of Healogics and the C-suite of Restorix. Those are the number one and the number two, actually, wound care management organizations in the United States. They manage collectively close to 1,500 centers across the United States, all associated with the institutions across the U.S. So that's on an outpatient basis. So we do have a great strategy, and we have the ramp-up already planned out strategically upon milestones. So get the reimbursement codes, go into that segment. Get the next reimbursement, move into that segment. And we have the representatives that we've been interviewing, lining up, training, getting them educated on the product, educated on the market, as well as the clinical data that we need to do a focused target so that we're not sending our representatives into markets where the opportunity doesn't exist. So we've acquired marketing data to say, okay, here are the top cellular tissue product users from an office-based perspective, from a clinic outpatient basis perspective, and from inpatient. So that data helps us target where to go first versus second, and that's our sort of go-to-market strategy. As far as marketing, we've been doing a lot of preliminary groundwork at these national conferences, as I mentioned earlier. And one key piece that Joe just reinforced is the certificate that we're pending through the American Medical Podiatric Association. That gives us a national and international ability to market, saying that this was evaluated by one of the most prestigious organizations in DFU, in podiatry, and we've got their seal of approval has confirmed that the clinical information from our trial and the utilization and what they've experienced with the product is a match and really helps the patient. So the patient care and the value proposition that we bring to the market in our marketing strategy versus some of the other cellular tissue products is just second to none. So, and, you know, hopefully that helps you out a little bit in giving you our vision, go-to-market and marketing strategy. We appreciate the question.
Yeah, thank you very much. And, again, this just excites me. I will be a forever GMBT holder because the areas you're going into are areas I'm extremely familiar with, and I think you're just creating a platform there that's going to be extremely successful. So best of luck to you guys all, and thank you again for everything you guys are doing.
Thank you very much.
And thank you.
And it appears we have no further questions. I'll return the floor to our speakers for closing remarks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. I really appreciate everybody tuning in this morning. You know, Generex is now poised to, finalize our phase three of our overall plan. And once that's complete, we'll hopefully be a NASDAQ company. And we can then move to growing the business and all the businesses that Generex has under its belt. So it's been a lot of work. There's still a lot more work to go. But Generex has a great team, a great group of companies. And overall, I feel that in the coming years, we will build considerable value for our shareholders and continue to do that. And I want to thank everybody for their time today. So stay tuned, and hopefully within the next month or two, we can do another conference call and update the shareholders do that from a perspective of being on the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. So thank you very much to everyone.